Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It's an honor to be with you today. I know from looking at the agenda that you have and from looking at those of you that serve as part of TAMIS that this is a group of scientifically motivated deep thinkers. I'm sorry I'm not one of those individuals to be here with you today. But I am here to have a dialogue, I hope, and a discussion about the topic that you have on the Shell Task Force, about how we can make Texas better, how we can ensure that we have the infrastructure in place to continue to contribute to fine universities like we're here in today, how we can continue to build our highways, how we can build our schools, and that's by having a robust oil and gas economy, one that does build jobs and one that does protect our environment all at the same time. And I look forward to having that discussion with you and visiting with you about that. I think that all Americans really deserve a deliberate conversation about oil and gas, the role that it plays, what can be done to ensure that we address the challenges, and that we do talk about the positive and negative aspects, and then find ways to mitigate any impacts that there might be. I know that any industrial activity has drawbacks associated with that, and those countries that have excelled are ones that find ways to address those in a beneficial manner for everyone. Do I point at that to click? Okay, good. I got to get this. I'm an Aggie, so you have to bear with me here. And I'm a little bit excited about Saturday night because Tennessee's come to town, and if y'all want to talk about that for about the next 35, 40 minutes, I would really like that. You like it even better if we win, which we're real excited about. I think this task force has a very good opportunity and a responsibility to scientifically inform both our state and our nation to help shape public policy for years to come. And we know what happens in Texas literally does change the world. I think that's a phrase that was started on a University of Texas campus, and it's one that rings true. Because people look to Texas from wherever you're at. I was at a conference in Colorado about a few weeks ago now, and Al Walker, the CEO of Anadarko, said no matter where you go in the world, people, when it comes to oil and gas, people want to look and see if it's made in the USA, and particularly what we do here in Texas. They look for that type of leadership on whatever the issue happens to be. You might think in my new role as president of the Texas Oil and Gas Association that I would only support science that comes to conclusions that might benefit my member companies. But I can tell you that the member companies that I represent are here for today and for the long term. And the reason that they've been successful is because they follow science wherever it leads. And they look for those outcomes and they work together for responsible energy production, all the way from the wellhead to the transportation system to the refinery. And it's an exciting, when you think about what it brings to the state of Texas, in 2015, almost $14 billion in state and local taxes and royalties were paid. At the peak of employment, we had about 415,000 Texans that had a direct job because of oil and gas. It probably surprises many to learn that 96% of the products that we use every day contains a component of oil or natural gas. And so it would be hard to envision a society that we enjoy today with what oil and natural gas brings. And the listing of the products there that you see on the screen, I won't try to go through there with you other than to say that the oil and natural gas industry does not shrink from data. They look at that data. They go where it leads. There is a passion there that has truly revolutionized the oil and natural gas industry by combining proven technology. We have become a player on the world stage. Our nation has a higher level of energy security than we've ever had before, and it has positioned the United States to be the number one producer of oil and natural gas. You know, the two gentlemen that were debating last night, how many of y'all stayed up and watched all 90 minutes of that? I did, too. Can you think about the position? Let's don't think about some of the things they said, maybe. Let's think about your relationship with other countries around the world today because of our number one position. How much better of a bargaining position that our nation is in today when it comes to national security issues, when it comes to working with foreign governments that may not hold us in the esteem that we hold ourselves in as Texans because we have that level of energy security. It's really a phenomenal position that we're in, and it's one that we hope we can continue to hold. Now, not everyone shares my optimism about the oil and natural gas industry. There are many different studies that have been published. Just because a study gets published doesn't mean that it follows the right methodology, the right protocols of proving that it is accurately done or not. In fact, many times there are studies that actually contradicts what is being purported as sound science that is flawed science, and you just don't hear much about that in the media. But as these headlines show, there are many good stories out there, and we hope that you will dig through all the different headlines, look through the different studies as you come to your conclusions, and make certain that there's things that are masquerading as science are called out, is what we would like to see. We know that there is a difference between real science and junk science. Just because a paper is published in an academic journal doesn't mean that it's gone through the protocols to be held up to the rigorous academic standards that we would all like it to be held up to be. And so that is of great concern for us. In fact, when I first got this job, I was given a study that was completed by physicians, scientists, and engineers for healthy energy, PSEHE, a very official sounding group, I think we would all agree, but it was actually run and funded by well-known anti-oil and gas activists and foundations. Studies that we see out there today says that hydraulic fracturing, commonly referred to as fracking, causes everything from cancer, deformities, birth defects, and even infertility. But we know that these studies have been discredited by scientists and experts because they relied on flawed methodology and data that was manipulated to reach preconceived conclusions. But that doesn't stop individuals from relaying that information. In North Texas, some have tried to link breast cancer with increased drilling with no credible evidence to support this claim. In fact, the Associated Press reported that experts from UT Southwestern Medical Center in Dallas, the Texas Cancer Registry, and the Susan G. Komen for the Cure in Dallas all said there is no evidence of increase in cancers in the counties in question. But you don't hear that side of the story very often. The Texas Department of State Health Services completed multiple investigations of instances of cancer in the North Texas town of Flower Mound and repeatedly found no evidence of a cancer cluster in the area. I could go on listing the studies. If any of you would like a copy of any of these studies, I'm happy to present them to you. We just think that being aware of this misinformation, of published, quote, research, is an important, critical part of what this task force can look at and help highlight the differences. There is significant, credible research from various universities, Stanford, Syracuse, Yale, California Council on Science and Technology, University of Colorado, and they've all concluded that fracking is not contaminating groundwater. We didn't have to even include UT and A&M. Universities that we don't often quote many times because of our pride as Texans have all come to these conclusions. A study by the Environmental Defense Fund and several universities, including the University of Houston and Carnegie Mellon University, concluded that methane leakage rates from natural gas systems were extremely low. And I know you have an EDF presenter here this afternoon. You can come to a reasonable conclusion if you really look for the facts. University of Texas at Arlington just completed an air emissions study in and around fracking sites in the South Texas Eagle Ford area, and they concluded that they are within acceptable limits. So while you're evaluating the impacts of shale development in Texas, here are some facts that are indisputable. We know that shale development powered by horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing, which fracking has been around for 60 to 70 years. If it was a person, they'd be drawing Social Security right now. That's how long it's been around. It's proven technology, and it certainly put us on a whole new plateau when it comes to energy security. We know that we're importing less than oil than we have at any time in our past 30 years. Shale development has unlocked massive reserves of natural gas. That is the reason that billions and billions of dollars of capital are flowing to the Gulf Coast regions, because they want access to that low-cost energy, natural gas, so that they can produce products in the United States again rather than other countries. And if you look at the shale plays across the nation, all of the infrastructure brings that to the Gulf Coast. And so the question is, are we going to have these products built here, or are they going to be built in another country? And then for Texans, we have to answer the question, are we going to fight to have that capital and those jobs in the Lone Star State, or are we going to go to Louisiana or Mississippi or Alabama or other places where that product can go? Thanks to fracking and the expanded use of natural gas-fired power plants, CO2 levels are near 20-year lows. The good thing about the members of the Texas Oil and Gas Association is they really do support an all-the-above approach when it comes to our energy supply products. They just think that the market needs to be the one choosing that energy supply rather than artificial mandates. We continue to ensure that we innovate when it comes to ways to protect our water and protect our air. This is a slide that reflects the amounts of layers of cement and steel that goes into protecting the groundwater. Some of the best minds in the world are innovating ways to reduce water use, to minimize our geographic and our environmental footprint, even drawing on technology that astronauts and NASA uses as our companies partner with these types of resources to bring the cutting-edge technology, research, and development that has made this product available to be used in the everyday products that we use in our homes, that we use in our offices, and that we use in our apparel. We're constantly striving to learn more. Knowledge is power. And when you look at the task that you have before you, we went through and looked at the different topics that you're studying here and that you're going to report on. And so we did it in a type of questions that we pose to this task force to look at as you think about where this will lead you. And sharing information is something our industry does. I see Commissioner Jackson here today. The Water Development Board is an agency and is an example of where our member companies came together. There was a state need and provided information that I think was used in a very professional manner to produce a good product. When it comes to geology and seismicity, the academic scientists and the industry agree that more Texas-specific research is necessary to better understand man-made seismicity. Does differences in geology matter? Is what's going on in Oklahoma relevant to what's taking place in Texas when the geology is different, the pressures are different, or pressures being considered in the downhole pressures? One set of data that I saw said that 99% of disposal wells have no correlation to any earthquakes or seismic activity. Some have been determined to have causation. But are we looking at and understanding it through that prism where 99% don't, or are we taking it from a different perspective? Land issues, how we can be more environmentally friendly and minimize the footprint through new technology. Water is certainly an important issue to all Texans. Are we doing all that we can to protect our water? And is there adequate research that is underway to reflect that? That's certainly important to all of us. When it comes to transportation, what's the safest way to move that product? Can we relieve the pressure on our roads by having more pipelines and more ways to move that product than putting it on roads and damaging the roads and those types of things? And then, you know, I think you at the end of the day, the social and economic issues, I think county judges will tell you it's a lot easier to balance your county budget when values are high rather than when values are low. And you can have, it's not mutually exclusive to protect our economy and to protect our environment all at the same time. For well over 100 years in Texas, we've been a trendsetter. We have developed new ways to do more with less. And it's exciting to think about, with the investment that's being made in research and development, where this will lead us in the future. There's a lot of information today that would suggest to our citizens that renewable energy, we could rely on that today. But experts that look at it objectively tell you that is simply inaccurate. And so without a robust oil and gas economy, we can't continue the high standard of living, the longevity of life, the things that we've come to enjoy. So as you look at your mission before you, we hope that you will look at these questions. We hope that you will incorporate them into what you do. And we look forward to working with you and answering any questions that you might have. And that concludes what I want to present to you today, and be happy to answer any questions while I'm here today.
Yeah, we do have time for questions, so let's open that up. If you catch one, you tell me, because I'm looking.
Am I going to get off the hook easily today?
I don't know.
The quail population in Texas, yes, is doing very well this year. That's exciting news for Texas landowners. I know.
Okay.
I thought Todd had an excellent piece that ran on the role for the oil and gas industry in terms of recycling water and reuse of water, and I was wondering if you would just speak to that just for a minute.
You know, thank you very much. We have a lot of companies are investing very significantly. They're creating partnerships with our municipalities and taking gray water and using that. Recycling is becoming more cost-effective as engineers look for new ways to use water resources to recover those hydrocarbons. Many landowners have benefited significantly by the sale of their water, even though they may not own the hydrocarbons. They own those water rights. And so there's a lot of partnerships that are taking place, and our member companies are really investing quite significantly to make it work better for everyone. You know, there's the sky's the limit on what can be done, I think, with research and development and just good old-fashioned American competition, that the less you have to transfer water, the better it is. If you can recycle it on site, it's better for everyone. So there are many good things that are taking place. You know, I think science has not developed in so many areas. There was an article that was printed just the other day that said dams and reservoirs are releasing tons of greenhouse gases. And when you look at what is happening in our environment, what the causation is, we just need to look at all factors. When we look at that, there's been quite a bit of discussion on methane gas and what impact it has. If you look at all greenhouse gases, I think methane is about 11% contribution. And if you look at methane, oil and gas systems, not just oil and gas production, but the whole entirety of oil and gas systems is about a third of that. But if you do the math, a third of 11% is a little over 3%. So the contribution from oil and natural gas systems to our total greenhouse gases is really about 3%. And so when you look at reservoirs, you look at agriculture, you look at the tailpipe systems that we have around the state of moving people around, there's a lot of things to look at. Sometimes some just get focused on one area, and I think we need to look at it in its entirety if we're going to have solutions that are meaningful.
Okay, we'll go here and then we'll go over there.
You mentioned the need to look at innovations as it relates to transportation and talked a little bit about the midstream activities for pipelines, especially in some of these plays where the industry is not as mature as it is in the Permian Basin, where we've obviously spent a lot of time over the last many decades. And so there's a lot of focus on pipelines and roadways, but there's also rail and waterways, in particular the Gulf Intracoastal waterways. So if you were to think about the industry's interest and concern related to those four modes of transportation? Is it just too diverse to really start to prioritize those as it relates to public policy, or is there something that maybe we in the public policy arena have been missing that we ought to be focused on from the industry's perspective?
I think when you look at the modes of transportation and move the raw product to where it needs to be, every study reflects that moving it through a pipeline system is the safest mode of transportation of moving that oil or natural gas. It's the safest. You don't have the wear and tear on the roads, but you also don't have the traffic situation. And I know in the Eagle Ford, as it's developed, been some horrific circumstances with the increased traffic. And so I think when you look at the data shows that moving it through the pipelines, you know, is the safest. I know there's a lot of discussion today. Is that process fair to landowners? And I think that's a legitimate discussion that needs to be looked at. Are there ways that can be more transparent so that landowners feel like that they are being properly treated in that process? And I think, when eminent domain, and it's not just oil and gas, it's just electric lines. The really big user is our transportation system. Transportation is moving cars and people and trucks. Pipelines move other products, water, sewer, those kinds of things. So I think when you look at those different modes, I think pipelines would be the preferred route that's safest for everyone, and it's a pretty small footprint when it's done properly.
Okay. Yes, we know that the safety incident records for onshore oil and gas are not nearly as good as they are for offshore oil and gas. And we know that there are many operators and many service companies, and some of them are less committed to safety, environmental issues, and community issues than others. What regulations does Texas Oil and Gas Association think should be passed to improve the overall industry's record to that of the highest performers in industry?
Well, they need to join the Texas Oil and Gas Association Workers' Comp Safety Group, and they would be able to solve many of those problems. I'm not teasing when I say that. It really is because of a low loss ratio. Our members have just got a $4.5 million dividend check returned to them because of the low loss ratio. But safety is an important issue, and I don't mean to make light of it by saying that. You raise a very serious issue, and we believe that the regulatory agencies need to be that oversee those aspects need to be fully funded. They need to have the best trained inspectors, and that people need to be held to high standards. And so, as an association, we're very aggressive in promoting workplace safety. And you're right, not every operator, not every driver on the road does their procedures the same. But, you know, our immediate goal is to make certain that the regulatory agencies have the funding that they need. For instance, the Railroad Commission is going under sunset review this year, and there's a recommendation from the commission to increase pipeline safety fees that will go toward pipeline safety, and we support that. That's one specific tangible thing that we're looking at and something that we support. So it's certainly a good question, one that's on the minds of a lot of people.
I'm going to toss one out for you. And if this is hard, you can tell us later, too. But why I think our study is so important is because Texas has been an enabler to this development and embraced it for lots of good reasons. So for that reason, I think we can inform not just the state of Texas, but other places that entertain going into this kind of development. Mm-hmm. So do you have any thoughts on what are some of the major things that we've learned here that we're going to be able to inform other states or even other countries?
Well, that's a great question. And I think from the level of activity that we have in Texas, we can show them a framework that works successfully. Our Railroad Commission of Texas is held up as an example across the country for the way to look at issues and to find solutions. Seismicity is on the minds of many Texans. Our commission adopted rules that before new disposal wells are permitted, that operators have to provide seismic information so that they can take that in consideration. The chart that I showed you about the multiple layers of cement and steel that go into the casing and how deep it needs to go is another example. And the commission promulgates many, many different rules in order to set the standard and set it high. So those are the types of things that I think we can look at. I think the studies that have been done by the Department of State Health Services and the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, we need our state regulators to stand up and answer those questions when communities have concerns, when cities or county officials or when citizens have concerns. Our legislators have funded these state agencies to go out there and ask those tough questions and to bring about strict enforcement. And our operators can be shut down and lose their ability to operate. And the commission has the ability to do that, and they do that. So I think those are good things that other states need to look at, because you can successfully recover those minerals and you can protect the environment all at the same time.
Thank you very much. And if you think of anything else, we're all ears, honestly. Okay, so I hope I didn't take away the chance from somebody else with that question, but we're going to go ahead and go to our next speaker. And thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you all.